It's time for Agriculture, presented by Turkana Farms in Germantown, New York, a small-scale producer of heritage breed livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres. They also produce a full array of garden vegetables, many of them heirloom varieties raised naturally, as well as an assortment of berries, including raspberries, blackberries, gooseberries, black, red, and white currants, mulberries, and elderberries. And now, here's Mark Scherzer.
As you're all no doubt aware from recent news stories, the second volume of the fourth National Climate Assessment was released by the interagency U.S. Global Change Research Program on Black Friday. It was widely assumed that the release on the day after Thanksgiving was timed to avoid garnering much public attention. This volume of the assessment, which addresses impacts, risks, and adaptation, including what measures can be taken to try to curtail human activities that contribute to global warming, is so antithetical to President Trump's policy agenda of promoting production of greenhouse gases that presumably burying the report was the only strategy the administration could pursue. In an interview with the Washington Post a few days after the release, the president said, and I quote, "One of the problems that a lot of people like myself, we have very high levels of intelligence, but we're not necessarily such believers." In his view, there's no reason for us to take action because, unlike other countries, our air and water are, and I quote again, right now at a record clean. He disputed the current 1,600-plus page report and the predecessor report issued in 2017 on the science of global warming, saying, and I quote again, "As to whether or not it's man-made and whether or not the effects that you're talking about are there, I don't see it. Whether or not the effects you're talking about are there, I don't see it." Sigh. The portions of the report I was able to read paint a convincing but very bleak and almost apocalyptic picture of our future, with reduced economic output, more hunger, more deaths from heat, if we do nothing to curtail the process of warming we've set in motion. The future is especially bleak if the highest end of the likely range of temperature changes occurs. While the president cannot see the reality of this scenario, I have to think that others might have an easier time envisioning it. The devastated survivors of the campfire in Paradise, California have already gotten a taste of what apocalyptic future in the West, with bigger, more out-of-control wildfires, will be like. I wonder what the future will look like here. According to the climate assessment, the part of the country that has already seen the most dramatic increases in average temperature since the beginning of the 20th century is the Northeast. Climate change has already altered our seasons, which has led trees to leaf out and produce fruit buds earlier. We all probably recall the early spring of a couple of years ago, which was interrupted by a severe few days of deep freeze. Several local fruit crops were wiped out as the vulnerable, prematurely emerging buds were destroyed. Overall, in the last century, the United States has also seen a 4% increase in annual precipitation. That precipitation has not been evenly distributed. Southern and western parts of the country have seen precipitation declines and much more severe droughts, while the northern areas, including our region, have seen increases of more than 4%. Some of this precipitation increase is attributable to the effects of more intense, large storms that come as one-time events, causing the sort of dramatic change we've seen in this region in Hurricane Irene and Superstorm Sandy in this past few years. But the future holds not just more intense storms. Overall precipitation in the northern U.S. is likely, according to the climate assessment, to rise by another 20% over this century. That could simply mean the kind of consistently wet summer we had once the rains finally kicked in this year. I have not, in my nearly 20 years on the farm, ever seen conditions as wet as those we've been having. Most of the summer, a portion of the lawn framed by Peter's ornamental garden has been too wet to mow with the lawn tractor and barely even mowable with the hand mower. The very shallow pond we dug for the geese out in the front pasture, next to which we planted a willow tree, in past years has usually dried out completely during the hot days of July and August. This year, it was dry for only a week and has been persistently outside its banks and almost double its intended maximum size ever since. When I tried to put the geese in their pen on the high ground at night, it seems I am slogging through a perpetual mud flat that comes close to sucking the boots off my feet. So much rain may seem good for a good thing for a grower, but contrary to Mae West's conclusion, too much of a good thing is not always wonderful. Wet conditions contributed to return to some blight on the tomato crop this summer, which I think in turn contributed to ending our tomato season earlier than in the past. The more significant effect we're now finding has been a big reduction in the availability of second-cut hay for the sheep this winter. We buy our hay, not having sufficient land to justify the cost of having haying equipment of our own. The persistent rain this summer led to ample growth of grass, but also to conditions that made it impossible later in the summer in many places to run machinery on the fields or to have days enough of sun to make hay. Our hay supplier has told us that there won't be enough second cut to fill the reservation we made. The sheep will be eating older first cut hay if they have to, but their preference is second cut, and I'll expect them to accordingly eat less and gain less weight than usual this season. In some places, rain reduces crop productivity by making it impossible to plant. That's a big issue in the Midwest. But in this instance, it's not planting, but the harvest that's affected. Either way, the climate assessment seems on target in predicting reduced agricultural productivity from drought in areas of reduced precipitation, but also reduced productivity from difficulties with planting and harvest where there's too much water. It seems to me entirely possible that our great disaster scenario in the Northeast will not be catastrophic floods from superstorms, but rather the soggy wetness that reduces food production, leading to food shortages, price rises, and ultimately reduction in public health that only the wealthiest may be able to insulate themselves from. It's an insidiously invisible, slow-motion type of disaster, perhaps akin to how we've suddenly found ourselves with reductions in life expectancy due to suicides and drug overdoses, in a way that's been unheard of in the last century. It would be all too easy to try to pin all our production problems on climate change. Weather-related problems in production have, of course, been forever a perennial farm problem. My niece Beth, who enjoys doing historical and genealogical research, recently sent me an agricultural census from the 19th century when the Potts family owned our farm. In one of the years, they reported several crops wiped out by hail. And we also know that human error, in the immediate sense, can control food production. Decisions made or not made, actions taken or not taken, can affect things. Every year, I have a pre-Thanksgiving panic that our turkeys are not big enough, and that I might have to disappoint people who ordered larger-sized turkeys of 13 pounds or more, because the heritage breeds grow smaller. In every past year, my Thanksgiving Eve anxiety has proved far exaggerated, and we've generally been able to supply everyone with something approximating the turkey sizes they wanted. This year, for the first time, the anxiety proved justified. To satisfy about 20 orders in the 13-pound-plus category, we had just 3 birds that made the grade. Only one went over 14 pounds. Many people who could not accommodate 2 smaller birds in their oven or otherwise had need for a big bird were disappointed and had to make alternative arrangements at the last minute. As I thought back through the season to figure out why, the only explanation that really seemed to address the problem was that when they hit their major eating and hence growth period in early September, we simply did not feed them enough. I discovered going up to the turkey pen one day in mid-October when I was here midweek, the turkeys were pecking in an empty feed trough, and I realized I had never said anything to either our farm helper, Peter, nor to Victoria, neither of whom had previously raised turkeys, about what the turkey feeding regimen ought to be once they started eating big time. I never told them how it was our custom to keep the turkeys' grain troughs refilled throughout the day, not just the morning and evening feeding times that typified all the other animals on the farm. The distraction caused by the injury and death of my partner, Peter, simply meant my focus was elsewhere, and that 6 to 8 weeks of potential weight gain for the turkeys was important. Climate change will challenge us to make thousands of small decisions about how and when to plant, what to grow, and how to nourish what we grow in order to respond to changed amounts of sunlight, heat, and moisture. Farmers will have to pay close attention, as they always have, to the details of the environmental circumstances they face. They'll have to develop strategies to maintain production that don't warm the planet and exacerbate the problem. If they manage to do that, we may avert the most dramatic declines in food production and public welfare. The publication of the climate assessment, as Congress mandated, gives some reason for hope that our government can be the farmer's ally in making the right decisions. The reaction of President Trump, on the other hand, and his implicit conclusion that there's nothing to do, since we don't know there's a problem, gives plenty of reason to fear that the climate assessment is the end, not the beginning of a collective response. If that turns out to be the case, and farmers don't get the help they need making the right choices, I'm afraid we'll see just how fast a slow-moving apocalypse can accelerate.
Agriculture is underwritten by Turkana Farms, LLC, a small-scale producer of heritage-bred livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres in Germantown, New York. More information, 518-537-3815.